Hello, welcome back to the Inside Elland Road podcast from the Yorkshire Evening Post. A new season is upon us. We've got a new intro theme and a new Joe, if you don't mind me saying. I'm joined by the YEP's chief football writer, Graham Smith. I know many of you tune in specifically for his dulcet Ulsterman tones. And with it being a new season, we're relaunching the podcast. We'll be conducting weekly episodes on everything happening inside Elland Road as the club embarks on something of a new start itself. We'll also be joined on occasion by the YEP's other Leeds United correspondents, Lee Sobert and Flora Snelson, and we'll have shorter match reaction episodes following United's fixtures throughout the campaign. So do remember to subscribe if you haven't already. That way you won't miss any of our releases. If this is your first time listening, please hit that follow or subscribe button on whichever podcast platform you use. We are available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Google Podcasts, Podbean, Overcast, Pocket Cast, Anchor, and plenty more. So you should be able to find us. Without further ado, though, I can see he's been sat there patiently waiting for his cue. Graham, how are things? Recovered from the post-Australia jet lag yet?
Yeah, your intro actually felt longer than the flight to Brunei. Yeah, it's really nice to be back podcasting again. Nice to be back on UK soil. Although, had the YEP needed me to be in Australia for a little bit longer, I probably would have managed. I could have just about got my head around that. It's been a funny summer, hasn't it? I mean, as Mrs. Smith said in an exasperated tone yesterday, the season's only just finished. What do you mean it starts again? It does feel like that Brentford game. It feels like a lifetime has passed since Brentford, but it also feels like Brentford was yesterday. And here we are on the verge of another Premier League season. It's quite hard to believe, but believe it or not, it's here.
Yeah, another Premier League season. Obviously, it wasn't guaranteed. It wasn't promised that it would be another Premier League campaign. But thankfully, I think I speak on behalf of everyone. It is one. Seven new signings then. Five who you could comfortably say our first team, another two who look like they'll mostly play 21s football this season. Two big exits, of course, a few loan moves, that tour down under, new coaching staff, new contracts. It's been a busy summer by all accounts, certainly compared to last year. I mean, we'll start with the Australia tour, because I know people will be keen to hear about what it was like over there. But the question on everyone's lips, what did you get up to on your days off?
Days off? There's no days off when you... I mean, the chief football writer at the YEP. We did actually get a day off in Brisbane. There was an afternoon off in the Gold Coast, so I had a wander, a 10K wander down the coast, which was very pleasant indeed. Spotted a couple of Leeds United staff out for their run, pre-match runs. And then there was a day off in Brisbane, and I managed to hire one of those electric scooters that the players were quite fond of as well. We saw Leif Davis breaking the law, actually. It's probably why he was sold to Ipswich. He gave Jack Harrison a lift on one when they were strictly one person per vehicle. Gave him a lift across the road. Saw Ilan Meslier on one as well. He was even taller on a scooter and Stroik. They were great. They went up to like 25 kilometres an hour. And you could kind of whiz around Brisbane on that. And the cities themselves were absolutely superb. I mean, in terms of a pre-season tour for location, it was idyllic, really. Lovely, really lovely.
I suppose you missed all the nice weather that we had over here when it was sort of upwards of 30 and you were there in your big puffer jacket going around looking at all the sights. If you had to pick and you had to rank them between Perth, Brisbane and Gold Coast, where, if say you emigrate tomorrow, where are you emigrating to out of those three cities?
I think probably Queensland would probably trump Perth, and I think probably the Gold Coast, just because of the beaches and the proximity to the beaches. Brisbane itself was very, very nice, city. Felt like a big city with quite a lot going on. But the I would say the Gold Coast in terms of where you'd want to live with a family. And when we were out there, managed to catch up with Jay O'Shea, who was Liam Cooper's teammate and very good friend at Chesterfield in Paul Cook's side that did so well. He moved out to Brisbane Roar 3 years ago, and he was over the moon to find out that Leeds United and Villa were coming across to play them this summer. But he has applied for his permanent residency simply because when they got there, you know, him and his wife and his three kids, within about a day, they were asking, how can we stay here forever? You know, it is that kind of a place that if you went there, it'd be very difficult to see a reason, you know, to come back. He had been playing for Bury, I suppose, so that maybe played a part in it as well. But you could tell that everyone involved at Leeds kind of appreciated the opportunity to go there as well. And Adam Forshaw, you know, was saying to some of the physios, we are so lucky that we get to do this. And I think for the young players who, for whom, you know, this was probably very new and very exciting. You think of Harry Christie and Archie Gray in particular, you know, being taken to Australia for a pre-season tour. It's the kind of thing that they'll never have experienced before. And some of the first team players as well will have not have been to Australia. I think it was Matthijs Klik's first time. In fact, not sure he went on the first one. Yeah, fantastic to be out there. And it's only a shame, really, that that will probably be the last time they'll be in Australia for a while. I think having been there twice in three years, that it would be a surprise if they landed back on Australian shores in the next couple of years.
We'll just have to lobby Peter Lowy to get a third one out there, because it's on my bucket list. I can't believe you get to go out there and watching Pascal Strauch turn into David Hasselhoff. Were you there on the surfing day? Was that an invite only?
Yes, that was invite only. I was quite glad as well, because it you could quite easily see that being an occasion where somebody would think, oh, this is an opportunity here to make a fool of the local press. And whilst I am a fairly strong swimmer, I'm not a massive fan of jellyfish and the like. And I was quite happy to leave Leeds United to their surfing exploits. They seem to have a quite nice rhythm about the trip in terms of the players would all go out in the morning with Marsh and the staff, and they'd go for walks along the beach, or they'd go, you know, they decided to go surfing one morning, and they'd go and explore the city a little bit. So it wasn't just the monotony of up, gym session, lunch, training, dinner, you know, team meetings. They did manage to split it up, but and as Rasmus Christensen was very keen to point out, there were a lot of commercial events that they had to do. And the fans really appreciated, I think, the buy-in from the players when it came to those. But it was a very, very busy, busy trip. It wasn't a perfect trip by any means. In football terms, probably not the ideal to take your squad 10,000 miles, you know, just before the season to play on fairly substandard pitches and play two games against Premier League opposition that kind of weren't shirking a tackle. You know, there was no quarter given or asked in those games. So no pre-season trip is without risks. But there were a few moments during Australia where you thought, you know, gosh, this could be costly. But as it turns out, the injury situation seems to be clearing up. It wasn't serious for Sinisterra and Forshaw. It wasn't serious for Archie Gray, thankfully, and they seem to have got away with it.
Yeah, you're talking about Sinisterra there, and you mentioned Rasmus Christensen as well. I suppose you've had the chance to speak to a few of the new signings already. I think was it Brendan Aronson, Christensen? Who else was it that you got to speak to?
Spoke to Tyler Adams. We'd already spoken to Mark Rocker before the trip departed. Spoke to Lewis Sinisterra as well, and then Rocker did he did one of the fan Q&A events in Perth in Fremantle in a brewery. I think that might have been it for new signings in terms of who we spoke to. We also spoke to Forshaw and Bamford and Klik. There was quite a lot of opportunity to get in around the squad and find out how they were getting on with pre-season and what they were making of it all and what they made of the size of Leeds' support in Australia, which was just incredible. You know, when you had 600 people turning up for a Q&A, you know, the day before a game, that said a lot.
Yeah, I mean, 600 people turning up to a Q&A 10,000 miles from where the club is actually based does kind of show how global the support is. And I think you could hear that in some of the answers that the players were given at those events. You know, they were genuinely taken aback by it, especially those who hadn't been over to Australia before. And, you know, even those who had, because I think I heard Patrick Bamford say a couple of times that, you know, the last time they were there, they didn't really get the opportunity to get out and about and see things. They essentially experienced Australia through the patio doors of an indoor gym. So I do agree. I think it was very good in terms of if not fantastic on the pitch, it was good in terms of an exercise to connect with the club's fans over there. Staying on the topic of new signings then, you know, what did you make of sort of the new lads coming into the team and how they've integrated, how they've settled on and off the pitch? Because, you know, I wrote something yesterday about how there's now 12 first team players who are pretty much, you know, committed their future to Leeds for the next 4 or 5 years. You know, quite a lot of players committed until 2026 and 2027. You know, it does feel as though the sort of the gentle evolution of the club is very much underway. And I suppose the new signings will be the poster boys for that. You know, what have you made of them so far?
Off the pitch, I was quite impressed with how quickly they gelled. You know, there was no... Quite often at clubs, you'll see when new players come in, and it's always when they kind of wander out onto the pitch before games that you notice it, that there's little groups developing, that, you know, you'll see the Spaniards together, you'll see the 23s or 21s, as we call them now, together, and you'll maybe see a few new lads who've just arrived at the same time banding together. You'll see the kind of senior pros in a little huddle. In Australia, they were all mingling, all mixed, all speaking to different people at different times. Tyler Adams, I think we spotted him with about 5 different groups of players during their social time. He seemed to just make a real effort to get to know a lot of people, but also he really appreciated how warm the welcome was from, you know, Bamford and Forshaw and the like. Harrison as well spent a bit of time with him. So it looked to me like there was no real cliques developing early on, that they all gelled very quickly in a social sense, which is really important. You know, Marsh was very big on that, and it certainly will help. On the pitch, I think you couldn't help but be impressed by Rasmus Christensen. He's almost the signing that I think from the minute you heard about it, you thought this could be a good one. No real question marks over that one. And in Australia, you know, he just does what it says on the tin, doesn't he? He gets up and down. He defends, he tackles, slight positional issues in terms of kind of getting caught upfield, but that's more of a team system failure rather than a Rasmus Christensen failure. And as Tony Dorigo said in his column this week, Christensen will go over, around, or through an opponent to get to the ball, and Leeds fans are going to really like that. And you got a glimpse of that, you know, when he when he got up and swaggered to the touchline after being bandaged up. You know, that walk of his, it's the kind of thing that you would mock if you saw it in somebody walking down Elland Road before a game. But when it's someone on the pitch, it's almost going to make him even more popular. And yeah, he's going to be the one, I think, that fans gravitate to the quickest and the most easily.
Yeah, I agree with you there. I mean, it's always good when you see it's not good when you see a player getting bandaged up because they've got a bang on the head. I'm sure Robin Cock will agree with that. But, you know, they're not messing about. They're just, you know, getting on with the game and that sort of thing. I think a lot of people resonate with that, especially Leeds fans. You've also got Brendan Aaronson as well, 3 assists in that Cagliari friendly. I think the outside of the foot pass for... was it for Bamford's goal or was it Rodrigo's? Bamford's, where he plays that through ball sort of on the break and he's just spotted that opening. I think that's really a first glimpse of why Leeds have effectively parted with 25 to 28, 29 million pounds for a player of his quality. And, you know, we've obviously discussed the new signings, that's transfers. We've had a few loan exits. I mean, Charlie Cresswell, I have to start on him. He's gone out to Millwall along with Jamie Shackleton, and I mean, 2 goals on his championship debut, both from corners. One is a towering header, another sort of steaming through into the 6-yard box to get on the end of it. I think fan favorite would be a bit strong to describe him so far, considering he's played about 6 Premier League games. But I think he's one that a lot of people have got an affinity towards, just because he has that same, I don't know, I'd say passion, but sort of spelt with a P-A-S-H-U-N that Christensen also has. I think he's in for a really, really good season.
Yeah, it's difficult not to be excited about this loan spell. In fact, it's probably quite a weird and uncomfortable position for Leeds fans to be in, you know, smiling when they see that Millwall have scored, because they're not clubs that traditionally get on very well. Charlie Cresswell is a player that everyone has very high hopes for on the pitch. And off the pitch, he's a very likable character. You know, big personality, very confident, but fairly modest with it as well. I quite like what he said last season, that he wouldn't consider himself a first-team player until he played about 50 games. And that said quite a lot about his character, I think. But it just feels like a good move for him. You know, if he can get out and play upwards of 30 championship games, you know, he comes back to Leeds so much more of a complete player. He'll come back more of a man, you know, because the championship will do that for you. And a lot of people have kind of made the Ben White comparison. I think if I was advising Leeds, I would probably go down the Brighton route of having Victor Orta or Jesse Marsh talk quite publicly, quite regularly about how pleased they are with how Creswell's doing, just to remind everyone that this is a Leeds United player, because you know full well that there will start to be a noise if this loan spell goes as well as everyone hopes. There'll start to be a noise probably around February, March time, you know, about possibly making it permanent, or could this be made permanent, particularly if Millwall do well this season. So Leeds will just want to kind of keep on top of that and damp that down a little bit and just remind everyone that we are very much in touch with Charlie on a regular basis. We're supporting his development at Millwall. We're very excited to get him back in the summer where he can continue his development at Leeds. And that's the aim really for him. He wants to come back. I think he'll want to come back and play. You know, he'll want to come back and be in a position where he's really in amongst it for a starting place at Leeds. That's probably the aim for everyone, because if you can develop a centre-half who can play in the Premier League without buying him, then you've done yourself a great service.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, developing players is always going to be the cheaper option, but it just requires that additional amount of patience, doesn't it? And I think Creswell is one who, I mean, every time you speak to, you know, coaches about him, whether that's Mark Jackson, who's worked with him at, you know, 16s, 18s, and then, you know, made him his captain for the 23s at the age of 17, 18, they all say that he's a bit old school, but he's got a bit of the modern centre-half in him as well. You know, he's got that oomph about his game. And one of the things that you know, covering the 23s over the past couple of seasons that I've enjoyed the most is that you can, no, it doesn't matter which stadium you're in, whether it's a training ground or whether it's, you know, I mean, it's not Wembley Stadium, but for the sake of argument, if it was, you can always hear Charlie Creswell shouting. He's leading the team from the back. He's very, very vocal. And you can see that, you know, he's someone who, I imagine, you know, headbutts punch bags for fun, just because he's just he just absolutely loves competition. He's such a competitor, and he must be an absolute nightmare to train against. So, you know, in those small-sided games, you know, there's going to be no chill from him. He's just going to be, you know, giving it both barrels. So if I said when that move transpired, the loan move, you know, Millwall is probably the best club that he could go to in terms of he's going to get sort of a comparative experience in terms of, you know, the rough and tumble of the championship, but also get those 30 or so games that you hope he can get. In terms of other loan outgoings or loans that maybe haven't happened yet, there is some interest still in a lot of Leeds' young players. And given that it's no longer sort of the Marcelo Bielsa regime, you know, the prospect of players going out on loan is less of a soft exit. It's more of a development focus now, I think it's fair to say. Is there any sort of update on where some of those other young players might be heading off before the window is out?
Someone spoke to me yesterday to say that Aberdeen were an option for Max Dean, which would be interesting. Obviously, be following in the footsteps of Ryan Edmondson, who went up there. Didn't have the best of times at Aberdeen, but it was kind of another important step for him. I'd like to see Max Dean have a crack at men's football. I know he's still very young, but he has that physical edge to his game. He's also got that edge to his attitude. That I think, I don't know, he feels like another competitor to me who could probably do with real competitive matches that where the points mean something. And 21's football, you know, it just doesn't have that same feel about it, particularly when you've played it for a season or two. Lewis Bate, there's been lots of interest in him, and I think we're fairly close to finding out his destination. I think that will possibly happen this week. And Stuart McKinstry, he looked quite close to a move earlier in the summer, and there was talk of a new deal being signed before he went out.
Whether it was the New Deal that stalled things or whether the interest changed, I'm not so sure. But we're still waiting on an update on him as well, and I think he'll probably go out too. What I would also say, though, is that not everyone can go out. Like, somebody has to stay and play for the 21s. You know, they can't all be 16-year-olds, you know, playing with Perkins and Giabi. Yeah, there'll still be a couple yet to go out. And then, of course, you've got your almost definite exits in terms of Helder Costa, who, as you know, we've said very often, he'll not struggle to find a club, given who his agent is. And Jan Poveda, who it looks like a loan with a view to a permanent, has been on the cards. There was some Spanish interest, there was some MLS interest, but we've got nothing concrete just yet, and we're expecting those two to go. And then you have the fairly surprise situation with Matthias Kleek. It's just a bit of a jarring sight to see him running, you know, post-match running with Costa and Poveda on Sunday night, having been on the bench, warmed up a little bit, and then kind of stopped warming up as it became more and more obvious that Marsh wasn't going to make any subs, which essentially means that, you know, Click's not going to be in the running for a starting place next week. And we didn't really expect that he would be. So it's a surprise, and it's not a surprise that he could potentially leave Leeds this window. It's not a surprise in terms of they brought in midfielders who they want to play, who they're going to play. Rocca and Adams are going to play. Aronson's going to play. The competition in that midfield now is fairly fierce. But it is a surprise for me in terms of Leeds wanted to raise the floor of the squad. They brought in a lot of sign-ins. The idea was that the first, second and third subs would potentially have a bit more experience about them than they would have had last season, that the squad would be deeper, that the bench would have a lot more quality and experience on it. And I still think Matthias Kleek's an option at this level. I really do. I don't think his legs have gone, as some have suggested. I think that's far from the truth. Mm. I still think he's a very clever player. But the World Cup probably complicates things. You know, he said to us in Australia last week, or 2 weeks ago rather, that he wanted to get as many minutes as he could before the World Cup. And he needs to. You know, if he wants to go to the World Cup and play with Poland, then he can't be arriving in November having made one or two starts, you know, and a couple of sub cameo appearances. So that's one to watch, but there's nothing imminent as we speak.
Yeah, no, I think I'll be most disappointed if Lewis Bate goes out on loan, mainly because we'll miss the videos that Sean McGurk records of him scaring him in their house or their flat that they share together, because that they have been fantastic in the past couple of weeks. There's absolutely tons of them, and they just get funnier and funnier. If anyone hasn't seen it yet, I think it was LUFC Updates on Twitter had shared the video from McGurk's Instagram story of sort of him hiding down beside Lewis Bate's bed, and then as he's just getting ready to settle down for the evening, he jumps out and scares him. And the picture on Bate's face is absolutely fantastic. It's the screen grab of it is just brilliant. So be a lone one, as you mentioned there, Graham, because he's another player with a lot of talent. And McGurk himself, I hope that this season could be a real good campaign for him with the 21s, because we've seen it in flashes last year, but now I think playing a stronger team in a division below, we could really see that talent really, really come out. But yeah, the little scares that he has, they're a great watch. You sent me that yesterday, didn't you, Graham?
Yeah, McGurk seems to be taking on almost the kind of Matthias Kleek mantle, you know, for the 21s of being the one with the sense of humour that he's really not afraid to show or hide. I also wonder if those videos are part of the reason why Lewis Bate might be quite keen to get out on loan and maybe just have some peace and quiet, some me time without the fear of a ginger head popping up from behind his bed.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Get him as far away from Leeds as possible to escape from the McGurk night terrors. New contracts then, speaking about a few of those 21s, and it would probably be a disservice to call them 21s anymore, wouldn't it? Joe Gelhardt, Sam Greenwood and Crescencio Somerville. Looks like a new number 10, Crescencio Somerville, replacing Rafinha, or well, rather taking Rafinha's old number, as well as Joffe and Sam Greenwood keeping their number 30 and 42 respectively. Tying them down, Greenwood and Somerville until 2026, Gelhardt until 2027. I think that's great business, purely because of the length of those contracts. And the fact that the three most talented under 21s over the past two seasons, willing to commit their long-term futures to the club as well.
Yeah, it was important business, wasn't it, to get that done? It is some of the best business the club have done this summer, I think, is getting those three on deals. Gellhart was the kind of most obvious and pressing one just because of the impact he made last season. He showed that he can be a game changer. You know, no one's going to forget the Norwich goal or the bit of skill and the assist for Pascal's equaliser against Brighton. So he's a real exciting talent. But the other two are as well. You know, Somerville has only really been able to show flashes. He's had to probably show more patience than anyone at Leeds over the last couple of years, because he came to Leeds with first team experience. You know, he'd had two seasons really worth of experience in men's football in the Dutch second and then the Dutch first tier. But he came to Leeds and kind of wasn't ready, evidently, for Marcelo Bielsa's team, and so had to bide his time. And even last season had to bide his time again, had to bide his time under Marsh too. Always found it interesting when Marsh said that Crescencio was, I think was the term, engaging more and more with the squad, yeah, or being more engaged with the squad, which I think was just a little tell from the manager, you know, just as to what the situation was with Somerville. And he's had to be patient, and, you know, it's interesting to me that they've given a number 10 shirt, almost like a, I don't know, maybe like a little extra push from Victor Orta there to Somerville to, you know, go and prove it this season. And the quotes that Orta gave as well, that he thinks it's time now for Somerville to kick on. Let's see if he can do that. The talent is there. You know, we've seen some of the stuff he's produced in the 23s before it became 21s. You know, it was too easy for him, that level. He needed something more. So Rafinha leaving, Sinisterra arriving but getting injured, maybe that bumps him up the pecking order a little bit for this weekend. But he's definitely got to he's got to put some hard yards in if he's going to get himself ahead of Harrison or Aronson or Rodrigo, who seems to be playing in that three behind the one. But it's there for him, the opportunity. You know, if he works hard and if he shows the right attitude, we could see a bit more of him this season. And Greenwood's almost the most satisfying of the three, because I started to wonder last season, when will we see Sam Greenwood and what is he? He came as a striker. He played 10, he played 8. And then when he did get his start under Marsh, he played as a 6. I asked Marsh at the end of the preseason tour, you know, what is Sam Greenwood and does it matter? You know, does a young player need to be defined by a position at this stage? And interestingly, he said, I'll need to look back through the quotes to get it exactly right, but he said something along the lines of, it's been a bit unfair to Sam that we've shifted him around so much. But he's got that versatility. And interestingly, Marsh is not the first to see Greenwood's potential as a 6. You know, Bielsa used to go on about that at Leeds as well, behind the scenes. And it kind of surprised a few people around the place that's how he saw Greenwood. But Marsh sees it as well. He sees that ability to pick a pass. And he played really well against Brentford. And I know you shouldn't just go on the evidence of one game, but it was almost like I don't want to say a renaissance, because that's not the right term when it's a young player, but it almost underlined the fact that he is at Leeds to stay. You know, that the fact that he played the part that he did in the run-in, you know, I always remember his little intervention before Rodrigo's goal at Wolves as well.
Yeah.
You know, putting pressure on the defence, bringing the ball down out of the air, and then Rodrigo stuck it in from an acute angle. So he played his part, you know, like Gellhart did in some big moments. And be interesting to see how he gets used and where he gets used this season.
I'd like to see more of Greenwood, definitely. And I think obviously the new contract is contingent on him featuring more regularly for the first team. And he's just very tenacious. I mean, I think he'll pick up a lot of yellow cards, but that's purely because his tenacity is unrivaled. Certainly in that 23s team last season, you know, the level did drop off for understandable reasons. Whenever he was subbed at half time. Or subbed on 60 minutes, because he just goes after everything. And he mentioned that in sort of his interview upon signing his new contract. And I think the maturity that he showed as a young player, you know, strikers are very selfish beings. So for him to come in as a striker and then be used in a variety of different positions, and up until the last few months of last season, not really appear as though he was going to be prioritized as a first team player. For him to show that that resolve and the patience is it's nice to see him finally get that new contract and to get a bit of love from Jesse Marsh as well, because a lot of us we were saying, weren't we, towards the end of last season, he keeps mentioning Sam Greenwood, and that's something which hadn't been the case previously. So it's the future is looking good for those three. Before we finish off, we'll be taking questions every week on this podcast. So do tweet us at Leeds United YEP. That is our Twitter account, and we'll collate some of those for Graham to answer. We'll endeavour to do weekly episodes on this and keep you updated throughout the season of everything that's happening inside Elland Road. We'll have another episode this week after Jesse Marsh's press conference ahead of Wolves, and a bit more of a preview towards that Wolves game. We'll have team news, essentially what has been said about both sides ahead of that one, and we'll have a little bit of fun and games and predict our starting 11s. But Graham, thanks for joining me on this relaunch of the Inside Elland Road podcast. Let's hope for a good season ahead.
Yeah, let's hope so. Let's hope for lots more moments like the Brighton one and the Norwich one and the Wolves game. But let's hope for a lot less nerves next season.
Thank you, guys. Thanks for tuning in. This has been the Inside Elland Road podcast. Remember to subscribe. Remember to recommend us. And we'll speak to you again later this week. Bye-bye.